Welcome to Hope Chapel. You're about to listen to Andrew Cole.
This morning, the title of this morning's message is How Far Will You Go? Just maybe say that to your neighbour this morning whilst I have a drink. How far will you go? So I'm going to ask you some questions. What are your limits? Jackson, what are your limits? What won't you do? When will you give in? When will you settle for the way things are? How far will you go? When is enough enough? When do you just think, this is never going to change, I'm just going to rest in this place? Or I've heard some people say, well, this is my lot in life. This is it. This is all there is. Some of those statements and some of those remarks are quite depressing, to be honest. So I want to dig into a well-known passage of Scripture this morning, and I want to look at it from a bigger picture for our lives, and just see how you can apply this to your world this morning. It's really big. I've loved looking at it from a different perspective, and I have listened to lots of people over the years and their stories, some heartbreaking, but some highlights as well, where people have been in areas for decades and then change happens and how that change happens. So how far will you go? If you can remember that this morning as you leave, how far will you go? Individualize it this morning. Make this message your message, not for Ben. Like, Ben will work out his own, but how far will you go this morning? And let's be a little bit selfish with the word this morning and apply it to our own lives. Is that okay? someone said... Note to self, never ever say that again. Quite often when something is not right with us, it leads to many other areas. If you have a small area of concern in your life, you might be sick with something which is bad, but not huge, but just annoying. That can often lead to many other things. It's there's a thing called the snowball effect. Everyone know what the snowball effect is? It basically is, which something may start relatively small, but then builds on itself. It just doesn't get bigger, but it builds on itself. And then before you know it, you've got this thing that's got so much momentum that it's out of control and destructive and can take you out and everyone in your path, for that matter. So there are things in our lives that just continue to build. And I guess this story, this passage, has a little bit attached to that as well. One thing I have noticed in Jesus' life, a lot can happen just when he's walking down the street. Just when he's going from place to place, a lot can happen in Jesus' life. So we've just been talking about when Jesus calmed the storm. Well, after Jesus calmed the storm, he was walking to go to Jairus' house, and he was passing through, or he was pressing through, crowds of people. So we're going to pick up the story in Luke 8, verse 43 to 48. I'm going to read out of the Message version, but then I will apply everything from the NIV. I just like the rawness of the Message version, okay? So, I wasn't going to ask if that was all right. I just said okay this time. So, Luke 8, 43 to 45, it will probably be on the screen, so feel free to read it or look at the screen. In the crowd, everyone say in the crowd. That day there was a woman who for 12 years had been afflicted with hemorrhages. She spent every penny, every cent she had on doctors, but no one had been able to help her. She slipped in from behind and touched the edge of Jesus' robe. And at that very moment, her hemorrhaging stopped. Jesus said, "Who touched me?" And when no one stepped forward, I love it, it was Peter, because Peter's my friend, I think he's awesome, so of course it was Peter. Peter said, "But Master, we've got crowds of people on our hands. Dozens have touched you." Jesus insisted, "Someone touched me. I felt power discharging from me." So when the woman realized that she couldn't remain hidden, she knelt trembling before him. And in front of all the people, she blurted out her story, why she touched him and how at the same moment she was healed. Jesus said, "Daughter," everyone say, "Daughter." Tim alone say, "Daughter."
Daughter.
Yeah. Jesus says, "Daughter, you took a risk trusting me, and now you're healed and whole. Live well, live blessed." What a fabulous story. Who knows that story? Who's ever read that? Everyone. Who's ever heard 14,000 messages on that passage of Scripture? Fantastic. Well, here's one more for you. This whole passage has so much more going on than her healing, just so you know. I want to have a look at some of the verses and how Jesus knew exactly what to say and do in this woman's life. I've grown to be such a respecter of this woman with her courage and her bravery and her strength and her determination and her perseverance, that this should all give us hope. No matter what you're going through, this passage should give you everything you need to get out of the situation that you might find yourself. It should be able to start to reduce this snowball in our life to something which is far more manageable, because it will show how much Jesus cares. Individualize it this morning. Forget about the crowd. Think about the woman and think about you and think about perhaps your situation. Because we don't know right here this morning. Men, don't switch off just because it's about a woman and a woman's issue. Don't switch off, because it's nothing of that. It's so much more. We have issues in our lives as men, and they get to these types of situations and we don't know what to do with them. And we think we try and hide, but we can't hide behind them, because our face and our countenance and the way we carry ourselves tells the whole story quite often. So let's find out what Jesus had in store for her and how he healed her, not just physically, but every other part of her life. Is that okay? So hopefully you'll see how far she was prepared to go. So in Luke 8, 43 to 44, it says, "And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped." Her condition. Let's talk about her condition. The mention of her bleeding issue provides a critical understanding of her suffering. In Jewish law, in Leviticus 15, it says that it talks about a woman who, with such a condition, was considered ceremonially unclean. This condition would have led to public isolation, making her face not only physical pain, but social and spiritual ostracism as well. So she would have been out of society. The fact that she had suffered for 12 years signifies a prolonged struggle. Think about your own situation. I'm not asking for any hands, but just think about yourself. An affliction that would have affected her sense of identity and belonging. 624 weeks with the same condition, day after day after day. Let's put that in perspective. 12 years with the same issues that normally come and go naturally in our lives. But this condition, 624 weeks that she was isolated, out of life, in lockdown, if you like, isolated from every single thing that she used to be a part of, her community, her life, the temple, everything she was a part of, she could no longer be a part of. She was ceremonially unclean, could not be seen, could not be around other people. Let's understand where she might be. We have 3 days of lockdown. We got people climbing the walls. We had people that couldn't go away for the weekend, thought they were going to pass away. We couldn't do the normal things in our life. The stuff that we were used to doing. You couldn't get up in the morning and go to your normal coffee shop. You couldn't drive to wherever you wanted to go. You couldn't get in the car and go wherever you wanted to go to. You couldn't go and see your family, your friends, whoever else you wanted to see. You couldn't do it. And our lives were changed, yeah? This world has been changed forever for that stupidity. We won't say that then. For that period of time, we will be mocked in years to come, I'm sure. But when we look at this was for her life for 624 weeks. How do you think her mental state may have been? How do you think she would have been coping? How, I ask her the question, how far are you prepared to go, woman that had this problem? How far were you prepared to go? What caused her to change all of a sudden? What was her mindset of thinking that she was about to do? So when I look at that, I look at how incredible this story even begins when I look at how long she was afflicted. Who here knows somebody, even if it's yourself, that's had a long-term ailment that has restricted you? Yeah. It's difficult, yeah? It changes you. It changes who you are. It changes the way you act. It changes the way you respond. It changes the way you are around other people. It changes the way you look at where you're going or what you're doing next. It changes actually who you are. And this poor woman was in incredible pain. I wonder what her faith song was. I've been stuck in this a bit lately, the Psalms are songs. I wonder what her psalm of faith was like. I wonder what song she was singing for 624 weeks. I wonder if her song at week 2 was different than her song at 328. I wonder if her song at week 328 was different to her psalm song of faith at 620. I wonder what she was singing. I wonder what was coming out of her mouth. I just wonder what sort of song she was singing. See, I try to put myself into this story and I'm starting to think, I wonder what I would be singing right there. Would I be singing, "Oh Lord, you're my strength and my tower. You are my refuge, you're my strength, you're my healer." I wonder what song I would be singing. What would you be singing? Think of some words right now. I don't want to hear them, but say them into your head. What would you be singing? Would you be singing, "Wherefore art thou, O God? Why have you forsaken me? Why do you not love me?" Would you have had songs of depression, of God, what is this? Are you even there? Are you real? What have I done, O Lord, for you to curse me like this? Do you not know me anymore? I wonder what our psalm song is. So those of us that perhaps are in some pain or some long-term stuff, what song are you singing right now? What is your psalm? What is the psalm that you sing every morning when you get out of bed? What's the psalm that you sing as you go to bed at night? What is the psalm that you're singing when you can't sleep at night and you're laying there wide awake in fear and trembling? What are you singing? I just wonder. I wonder if we dare to put ourselves so far into this story that we make it so real, or are we just happy to read this in the four verses that it was, and think, oh, that's great, Jesus came through for her. She did what she did and Jesus came through. Let's go to the next thing, because Jesus then went and healed Jairus' daughter. So let's go to that part. Let's go to the next part of the chapter, because that's really cool as well. But no, let's just stop and sit in this story and start placing yourself in this story. What would you be singing? Her desperation and faith, her action of approaching Jesus from behind to touch the hem of his garment is so significant. It reveals her desperation and determination. Her belief that just the touch could heal her shows remarkable faith. In Matthew 9:21, the same story, the woman expresses the thought, if I only touch his cloak, I would be healed. This is what she started to sing. If only I could touch the edge of your cloak. I used to feel that it was the hem, that the hem was only at the bottom. But that's not true. See, this lady was not allowed to be in society, okay? So she was not allowed to be seen. She was ceremonially unclean. She would have had to have broken the law to do this. I'm not saying do that. I'm just saying this is what her tradition that in that time. So she would have had to say, she would have heard that Jesus is coming and this guy can heal. And she maybe her voice started to change. Maybe she started to get a bit of a pep up in her spirit, thinking, man, this is it. 624 weeks of this are going to stop. And maybe she started to just think, okay, I'm going to do this. What can I do? Okay, there's going to be a crowd of people. I'm going to get myself in that crowd. I'm going to get lost in the crowd. You can be lost in the crowd, but don't get lost in the reason why you're in the crowd. Don't get lost in that reason. Don't just become a number. There's a reason you're in the crowd. Make sure you know your reason why you're in the crowd. Why are you here this morning? Make sure you know the reason why you're here this morning. Don't just turn up. Because if all we're doing is just turning up, then let's all go home and enjoy the sunshine. But if you're here for a reason this morning, make sure you remember your reason why you're here. She knew her reason why she was in the crowd. But she wanted to blend in because she didn't want to be noticed. Don't notice me in this crowd. So I used to think that she would have been crawling on her hands and knees trying to touch the hem of his garment. When I was a younger man, I preached on this message and I actually crawled on my hands and knees. I shall not be doing that this morning. Well, I can, but that's where the message will stay and start and stop, because I'll still be down there. So we won't go there, because I don't believe that anyway. I believe she just needed to touch, in her mind, she just needed to touch the edge of his garment. And there still was a reason. We'll go this reason now. There is a symbolic meaning of the hem. Of the hem of Jesus' cloak connects to ancient Jewish beliefs about the importance of the... Whew, are you ready for one of these words that I don't understand how to pronounce? That's a zitzit. Anna, help me. Was it close? No. It's a zitzit. T-Z-I-T-Z-Z-I-T. Zit. Needed to touch his Jesus's... No, okay. We need to touch his... To zitzit. the fringes or the tassels. That's what I should have just said. Now you'll understand. It's used in his prayer, in prayer shawls, in Numbers 15, 38 to 40. You can check that out. These fringes were reminders of God's commandments and presence. Her reaching out to touch the hem can symbolize her desire for a tangible relationship with God's promise and healing. She knew why she was in the crowd. She knew exactly what she needed to do because that's what she set her heart in. That's where her faith was, in what she had believed in her heart of hearts. If I could just walk up in this crowd where nobody notices me and come up behind Jesus and just touch the hem, the edge, the tassel, the fringe of his garment, I believe I can be healed from 624 weeks of bleeding. Come on, every woman said. Right. Wow. The healing occurs immediately upon her touch. The response just underlines Jesus' power and authority of faith. It shows that faith does not need an elaborate ritual. Even a mere touch in faith is adequate for God's intervention. Let's not make a rule book on how healing comes. Let's not have a rule book of rituals and traditions of how things should take place. Let's understand that our Jesus can go way beyond those things. Way beyond, because he responds to what? What was he responding to in her? Her heart. Her heart was crying out. I believe that her faith song was strong. I believe there was something in her heart of hearts that she just knew, that she started to sing, if I could get in that crowd, if I could get so unnoticed, if I could be unrecognized. 12 years she'd been isolated. Who looks the same after 12 years? I don't know that she would be recognized. So I reckon she was basing some of this on that. I don't reckon people would notice me. See, Matt had hair 12 years ago. See, if Matt was that issue, he'd no problem. He could just go straight up. He could walk up to the front of Jesus and no one would notice him. But you just don't know. Mate, I was 60 kilos 12 years ago. Everyone picks on the fat kid.
Have you seen me?
Yeah, that's right. That guy's still inside me, I'm telling you. I just gotta find him. Woo! Oh, where were we? Divine intervention, that's what we need, Tim. In Luke 8, 45 to 46, it says, who touched me? Yell that out, someone. Who touched me? Jesus asked when they all denied it. Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you. But Jesus said, someone touched me, and I know the power has gone out from me. Jesus asked the question, who touched me? It shows several dimension of his character here. It shows his awareness and his sensitivity to an individual need within a crowd. So you may not think this morning that Jesus knows or can hear you this morning because you're in a crowd of people. Let this dismiss that. Understand that you can still be in a crowd and Jesus knows exactly what you're crying out for, knows exactly why you are here in this crowd. Because your heart will sing so loud, Look, I don't believe all the time that God hears our songs that we're singing, maybe on the screen word for word, but I believe he hears the songs of our heart that we're singing as we sing, why you're in the crowd, why you're here, how you're here, and what you're singing out loud. Because I think he responds to that. And this morning, I believe he was responding to people. I love that we had a handful of praise reports this morning. Jesus is responding to situations. I would love to think that we get to the point where there's nothing left to pray for. All we've got to do is praise. But whilst we're still praying and for needs, we'll keep praying. Ruth will be our keeper of our prayer requests. And every Tuesday, we'll bring them up and we'll pray for them again and again and again. And we look forward to saying, answered, 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 answered. Jesus heard the cry. Jesus heard the song. Jesus heard the shout. Jesus recognized why you were in the crowd and heard every single tear that fell from your eyes. Because your tears, I believe, shout loud as well. I think every part of what's happening in your heart screams. Worship doesn't have to be loud with our voice, but what's in our heart is screaming. There's no PA system that can handle the volume that our hearts cry out. He can hear. He's not deaf, but he hears every single cry of our hearts. Who touched me? He said. Jesus recognized a distinct faith-driven contact, a faith-driven cry that invoked his healing power. It underscores the idea that encounters with Jesus can be different based on the heart's intention and the level of faith. I just know something that we're crying out for, and someone said it this morning about authenticity. The difference, we can have two congregations singing exactly the same songs, having exactly the same thing, and one would be authentic and one wouldn't, and you will know the authentic. And it could be not on an outward, but you'll know it from the inside cries of hearts. I yearn for authenticity in our faith. I yearn for that. I'm not talking about that we have to be glowing, that you have to be an angel. Look, that's nothing to do with me. That's you and your adventure and walk with God. I'm talking about an authentic faith and an authentic relationship with your God. And that's a heart cry. Anything that's external of that, it could be a head cry, knowing that, you know, Andrew would like to hear some more noise in the service. You can do that. Tim can come with his twang in his accent and he knows I'll laugh at that and I'll pick that out. But that's our relationship, that's connection. But there might be a cry behind his daughter. There might be a cry behind what he says and his heart screaming loud, and that is the authenticity of faith. That is the authentic, that's the words that Jesus hears. So even if you say nothing this morning, I know that Jesus is hearing the cry of your heart. And although you might be in a crowd thinking, if I could just go, if I just get one word today, if I could just understand one thing, if I just know that Jesus hears my one cry this morning, then I know my situation will change. That's authenticity of faith. That's what we want as a church. That's what we want to see built in our lives. We can have all the other stuff, and I want all the other stuff. I want Triffords. I want all this other stuff. But I want more the authenticity of our faith in what we do and how we do things. That's where I want to sit. In Luke 8, 47 and 48, then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet in the presence of all the people. She told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, Tim, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. The woman realizes her act cannot remain hidden. Her trembling response indicated a mix of fear and reverence. She didn't know what was going to happen. Could she get in trouble even though now she was healed? What would have been going through her mind? This excitement and joy that there was no more 625 weeks. It was stopping at 624. That was her Guernsey number for the rest of her life. That's when her life changed. 624, done. Touchdown. I'm out of here. I'm free. I'm whole and I'm healed. I did this. What is going to happen now? Her fear and her trembling. She comes forward publicly sharing her story of struggle and healing. The act of vulnerability is so crucial. It transforms her from a marginalized figure into an active participant in the story of grace and healing. How powerful that she becomes an active participant in this story of grace and healing. Jesus' response by calling her daughter, Jesus reinstates her identity, offering her acceptance and belonging. It's a term of endearment, being called daughter or son, that reveals more about Jesus, his compassion, and the personal relationship that he desires with each and every single one of us in this room, in this community, in this world. His statement, "Your faith has healed you," affirms the principle that faith is a vital component of receiving healing. It's not merely a magical touch. It is the faith behind the action that activates God's healing power. It's the song that you sing. It's the song that you sing loud. It's the song of your heart. See, reinstating her identity. How did that happen? How did she lose her identity? She was unwell. How do you lose your identity? You lose your identity because of 624 weeks in isolation. That's how you lose your identity. You can lose your identity when every week you talk to someone about your problem. After week, I'm in my mess. I can't do this anymore. You start to lose your identity of who you were because of the words you speak out, because of the situation you find yourself in. It consumes you. You become a different person. You act differently. You become a different person. The joy is lost. The happiness is lost. The fun loving, even if you're just a more serious person, the things that you speak about, your conversation changes because this issue consumes your life. And then before long you lose who you were and you lose your identity. I've been on a personal journey of identity since I was in grade 3. See, I lost my name when I was in grade 3 by a move that we had in our family. I got out of a car to go to a new school and my mum said, "Hey, your name's no longer Cole. It's now this." Okay, fair call. Not sure why, but we'll go with it. Sort of preferred Cole, but no, well. So I go to this new school on my own. I'm pretty shy back then. I don't even know how I did this. I walked into this school. Mind you, it was Robertstown Primary School. There's only about 4 people in there. There's only 122 people who lived in the town. But anyway, I still remember going into this school and everything, they knew my name. And me, because they knew my new name. I'd never heard my new name being called. So I thought, okay, end of the day, I'm sure I would have been thinking, wow, I've got a new name. I don't even know how this happened. So anyway, so I went for years. I got trade papers, I got a passport, I got bank accounts, I got driver's license, all in this new name. But it was never my name. It was never legal. Back then, I could walk into a bank and say, oh, can you just change the name on my account? Sure. They get the little card out, cross that name out, put a new name on. It actually physically happened. ANZ's a little bit different these days. But my name was changed. When I got married, I wanted to have my own name because the name that I had wasn't even the person's name anyway. He had a different name. His name was Taylor. So it could have been a Taylor. Stephen Mel. Yeah. Could have been your brother, Steve. Boom, boom. Well, I'm not your daughter. Anyway, so it caused this riff that I wanted my name, but I didn't know who I was. And I never thought about it until that moment. I thought, I want my name. So I got my name back, but I had to lose some other things in order to get my name. So then I never really felt that I had my own identity. I also was born in a different country. I was born in England. And I've never become an Australian citizen. So over the last few months, some things have happened where God's been dealing with me with some really deep-rooted issues that I didn't really know that I had. But I actually knew I could hear my song. My psalm that I was singing was craving for my own identity, for who I was. I know this may shock you. It's been a few years. Maybe my internal thing was 624 weeks old and my song was slightly different. So through different events, I started to realize that maybe if I could just do this or I could just do that. I applied maybe 5 or 10 years ago to become a citizen, but I went part the way through it and then didn't do it. I don't know really why, but I just didn't do it. I found it too hard. It was in my face. It stirred up stuff that I didn't know. When you don't know when you came to a country, you didn't know where you first, and you had to rely on the National Archives of Microfiche to sort out, okay, so that means this and that day, okay. So I had to work out my own code. And this is no disrespect to my family, by the way. I'm not dissing them. This was just circumstances. This was just the way things were. So I don't hold anything against them. I just needed it for me. I wanted to get somewhere. So I put that off and I didn't go any further. I went to reapply again and things were different. So I reapplied at the start of this year and my interview came up this week and I went and with fear and trepidation that I was going to fail this country that I've been living in since I was 5, that I was going to fail because I didn't know how many senators were in each state or what the national flower was or how many houses are there in Parliament or who changes the laws or all these questions. And I had this fear that I'm thinking, man, I don't want to fail my identity. My heart was singing. I was doing stupid things. Like, because I have sore knee, I don't like to travel too far. If I got a car park, I'm going to park in the front door if I can. So I'm going down to this interview, man. I parked 1.5 k away, so I just make sure I get a car park. I thought, what are you doing? And I had all my gear and I was, you know, briskly walking, almost a run, to get to the front door. After I had 10 minutes for recuperation, I get to the door. And I have my water bottle and then they asked me a question. I felt like, oh, yes, I've got this. So I gave him a document and I went there. And he goes, scan it. I said, okay, I've got my ticket. I leave my water bottle in there, which I didn't know I left my water bottle there. So I go into the next room and then I'm sitting there thinking, I really need a drink. I thought, where's my water bottle? I thought, I must have left my water bottle in the car. So I'm thinking, I'm feeling really clammy. I thought, what is going on here? So then I was supposed to be in there for 20 minutes so I could have a quick learn of the test again. But then my number came up straight away. I said, no, it's too quick. I'm not ready. So then I had to quickly go to this interview. So then I go to that interview. And then after that interview, I go to my other interview where I had to do my test. And I said, what happens if I fail? And she goes, you get two more chances. I said, what, now? And she goes, if there's enough time. I thought, oh my gosh, I've been waiting years for this. Anyway, so I get through the test. I pass the test. I got 100%. Yay, me. So now comes the police check. So, you know, we'll see. I'll let you know. Have you ever been in trouble with the law? No, sir, Your Honour. Have you ever had any speeding fines? Some. Not all mine, though. Anyway, so we get through that. So we'll see what comes back of that. So anyway, so I go out of that room back into my second room again. I thought, where's my keys? I thought, where are my keys? I thought, I mustn't have locked the car. That must be with my water bottle. I thought, man, I'm sure I had them with me. So then I go to the security guy. I said, did anyone hand any keys? Are they Ford? I said, yes. He goes, and he laughed at me. I said, mate, you may laugh. Give them here. So then I get those keys and I go back into the first room and there's my water bottle. I said, I'll take that as well. Thank you very much. And I walked out. And I'm sitting there thinking, what on earth was I feeling like? I thought, man, I was more nervous than anything. And I thought, I knew the test wasn't going to be overly hard, but it was bigger than that. I had fear and trembling on this because this was attached to my identity. I want to be known as an Australian because this is my life. So my identity, when I pass, I'm going to wear an Australian shirt now, and that may be controversial as well, but I don't care at the moment because I just love Australia. I reckon it's the best country in the world. I've got a new appreciation for this country. We need to protect it and love it. We need to pray for it. We need to pray to God to make a sweeping revival right through every single town and city that we have. But I can understand her identity crisis. You too may understand that as well. But Jesus not only healed her, but he healed our identity. He healed her every part of her life. The guys can come up now. So Jesus, this woman went to get healing because that was changing her life. But Jesus saw way beyond that. Jesus saw how that whole issue had changed her whole life. And in that short encounter that woman had, Jesus healed every single part of her life. She went away. He said to her, go in peace. Just saying to her to go in peace speaks volume. It signifies restoration, not just physical healing, but holistic, total healing of her entire being, including the social and spiritual restoration. In a broader context, it reminds us that genuine encounters with Jesus bring peace and completeness. A genuine, authentic encounter with Jesus changes your life. Changes your life. None of this fast food Christianity that may appease you for a moment, but then you walk out still hungry. I'm talking about genuine intervention, genuine encounters, authentic heart cries that Jesus responds to, that stops in the middle of a crowd, that Jesus is here in this whole crowd, but hears your cry and says, I've got you. Your heart's cry I've heard. And because of your heart's cry, I not only heal you, but now I call you by name. And now I call you by this, and now I restore everything that original issue took away. And it doesn't matter whether it's a healing issue. Mine is an identity issue. God has done amazing things that I only knew. I think Elise said something this morning about, I can't remember who said it, but something about the cry deep inside that's the only thing that really matters is your cry deep inside. What is that? I love the thoughts that he hears the cry. And sometimes the cry of my heart, I went years with not feeling like I had an identity issue, but when it starts getting highlighted, I realize how deep it went. And I found my identity in Christ. But then the church unfortunately changed that. I allowed the hurt in church to change my identity that Christ had given me. So then you go for years feeling a little less than you ought. But Jesus loves us so much that he won't leave us in that place. That he brings us right around to a place. I feel like recently that I've just been saved again. I feel like the trees are looking fine. The sky is wonderful. The air is fresh and crisp again. But I know that's not the case, but I just know that there was some pieces that needed to be fixed. And I couldn't go to a doctor or a physician. I couldn't use all my money on those things because they would make them worse. Because for my case, they would have gone to, I couldn't explain it, but my heart was crying out, but no one could hear my heart. But Jesus heard my heart. So if I told you the one decision, which I won't because it means nothing to anyone else, it was one word that was spoken a few months ago that changed something for me. And this whole process now is one thing after another, and I am thankful that God doesn't heal just one. He heals us whole, everything around. I finish with this and let's stand to our feet. The woman's story exemplifies the principle of active faith. Her actions demonstrate that faith often requires movement and courage. It teaches us that God honors our steps of faith, no matter how small or how desperate they may seem. The passage highlights the compassionate nature of Jesus. He is not only concerned about our physical needs, he cares deeply about our emotional and our spiritual state. This aspect of Christ invites us to be vulnerable and honest in our need for healing. The woman's act of sharing her story is significant. It paints the picture of the importance of a testimony in your faith adventure. Personal experiences, God's grace and healing serve as encouragement to others. It helps others build theirs faith and helps answer for others. Has answers for others on how far that they should go. The transition from social isolation to acceptance underscores how Jesus restores dignity and identity. For anyone feeling marginalized or unworthy, this story can serve you as a powerful revelation that Jesus reaches out with love and affirmation. The whole passage presents a rich tapestry of theology, faith, and personal restoration. The woman's encounter with Jesus offers powerful insights, not only into the nature of faith, but also into the heart of Christ's ministry himself. And as we've looked at this passage this morning and hope you can reflect on it today, we can be reminded that no matter how desperate our situation may seem, Jesus is always within reach, ready to meet us no matter what your state is or our state is. I finish with the same question that I asked at the start. How far will you go? How far will you go to seek what you need to seek, because the only place you'll find it is in Jesus. May God bless you as you look at that yourselves. I hope you do. I hope you individualize today. I hope you can take today's message and make it just yours. Don't think about anyone else. Just think about your life. See what song or what psalm you're singing. And may God bless you in every effort that you have. Let your heart be heard. Because I can hear hearts and they sing loud and loud and loud and proud in the things of God. May God bless you. And we'll see you next week for Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the message this week.